All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way monologue, and I'll just tell you, it's Veterans Day was good. I mean, first of all, I hope that all of y'all had an opportunity to be together, to do something, to have a little extra time off, to spend that time doing something that, you know, that pleases you. But I hope somewhere in the mix, you were mindful of the fact that veterans made that possible. And if you had an opportunity, I hope you thanked a veteran for their service. But yeah, yesterday was Veterans Day. So thank you to all of you from us, all of you and yours who have chosen to serve our great nation. And I'm mindful, y'all, that we are about to have a new commander-in-chief. Sort of. I mean, Donald Trump takes office. This is a case of old boss is now the new boss. But I, for one, am glad. Any of you who have listened to this show for a bit, you know that the military has been a huge part of my life. It's generational. In my family, I mean, I've got my great-grandfather's discharge certificate from World War I at home. On a shelf in my study, I have my grandfather's general officer's pistol in a shadow box. On the wall hanging nearby, I have a Bowie knife that my father carried in Vietnam. On the floor of the same room, I have a rug that I brought home from Afghanistan. In a frame, I have a picture of me pinning jump wings on my own son. All of these are symbols of my appreciation for the life that God has given and the choice that made by so many in my family to serve in uniform. Having said all that, I believe that also means that I've earned the right to say that I'm ready to see the U.S. military restored to its former overwhelming capability. Now, I heard a story once about Tiger Woods. He was hitting balls on a driving range, and a man watching him made the remark, "Oh, I wish I could hit him like that." And allegedly, Tiger Woods responded with, "No, you don't, because if you did, you'd be up at the crack of dawn hitting 10 buckets of balls before breakfast." I mean, sure, Tiger Woods had natural abilities, but he also honed those abilities with long hours and muscle memory. It paid off. But it brings up the old axiom, that a saying that rings true no matter what time or era we live in. The phrase is, train like you fight so you can fight like you train. And I'll add to that we must train to fight so we can fight to win. Muhammad Ali, for all of his warts and blemishes and controversies, he was also a world champion who knew this to be true. When questioned about his own intensive daily training regimen, Ali once responded, "I hated every minute of training," he said, "but I don't quit. I suffer now and I live the rest of you suffer now and you live the rest of your life as a champion." Ali, like other athletes and non-athletes for that matter, they knew that in order to excel in the outcome, you must train and train and train some more. People who excel know that life rarely works out with excellence for those who just wing it. I mean, don't get me wrong. God can step in and intervene in a way that nobody expects and snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. But absent those miraculous moments, we are also called by God to be good stewards of our talents and gifts and possessions and opportunities, which means we have to invest them or train them. So in the heat of battle, we are most ready. Not a little bit ready, not sort of ready, but most ready. So thinking back to the military. In the military, this adage comes true in so many ways. I mean, you know, take your weapons training, for instance. So much of what you're capable of doing on the field of battle with your assigned weapon is a function of your time spent in training. Can you clear a stoppage or re-engage after a malfunction? What amount of time does it take for you to change your magazines for a reload? Can you break it down quickly and efficiently and reassemble it in short order? All of that training takes place before you ever move to a live-fire range to actually learn to put rounds on target. Why? Because we have to teach soldiers to train like they fight. If a soldier can clear a stoppage without thinking about it, if he can change out his magazine without taking his eyes off the target, if he can reassemble his weapon blindfolded in training, then he'll be able to do it in a dark foxhole in the middle of the night. Same is true for missions. There's a phrase that's so often heard that is, once you're in planning, your planning is complete with leaders giving 2/3 of the planning time to their subordinates, the unit then moves to its rehearsals. The mission's coming up, but the old rule is if you rush for time, at a minimum, you always practice the actions on the objective. What that means is that the key moments of any mission, they're often the most dangerous. But they must not only be thought through, they must be walked through, run through, rethought, and walked through and run through again, and if necessary, again, and if necessary, again and again, until every member of the team knows their role and the role of every other team member, because you train like you fight and you fight to win. The same is true for anything else. I mean, look at football. You're going to find the individual and team drills from basic skills to full-on integrated execution of the most complicated plays. They were all practiced and practiced and practiced before they ever took the field on game day. But in the military, it does go a step further. This is important. Here's where I'm getting to my point. In the military, the idea of that kind of training goes a step further because the stakes are so much higher. In the military, we're not just training for a medal, training to win a game or a resume builder. We're training soldiers to win on the field of battle where lives are at stake and national security is the outcome. And there are amazing soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines guarding our nation's interests, but their ranks have been depleted over the last 4 years, depleted by feckless leadership who implemented woke policies and misguided vaccine mandates and pushed false narratives of extremism and racism permeating the honored ranks of our men and women. Men and women who stand next to each other, by the way, regardless of skin color. Mission posture has been degraded by shifting focus of key leaders away from actual enemies on the world stage, demanding that we focus our military instead on distracting social experimentation. Activism, like the Pentagon naming climate change as the existential threat to be addressed by the DOD. Or mandating the implementation of liberal, progressive, diversity, equity, and inclusion policies in recruiting and retention, while moving away from the actual meritocracy that the U.S. military has always been built on. Or allowing soldiers to elect to be non-deployable while going through government-paid transgender surgeries and transitions, that has been a disruptor to morale. Things like co-ed barracks and co-ed latrines and co-ed locker rooms have been a further disruption. Using taxpayer dollars to offer service members extra paid leave to travel for abortions has been in defiance of existing federal law. All this has combined, all of it, has combined to make for the smallest U.S. military we've had in over 80 years, as recruiting has dropped to epic lows for the past 4 years. And none of this has to do with training like we fight, so that we can fight like we win. So if we're going to fight like we train, then the training must truly resemble the fight. Getting dirty in war means getting dirty in training. If you have to make snap decisions under stressful conditions, then the training should also be stressful to hone that ability to look the situation over and then calmly and coolly execute your skill set, like somebody who has the confidence that was brought about by countless repetitions in the training environment. General George Patton once said, "He who sweats more in training bleeds less in battle." Our nation, our culture, has grown soft, and as a result, it has allowed the military to invent problems out of thin air, only to find out that while they stay distracted and chase unicorns and absurdities, that real issues are mounting up around them. But we can fix this by refocusing our recruiting efforts on telling young Americans that if they join the U.S. military, it's not just about whether Susie has two daddies and whether or not they're going to be inclusive and learn how to, you know, accept people. All that happens in the military anyway, as we all wear the same color green. You will refocus your recruiting efforts and recruit more people when you tell young Americans that if they join the U.S. military, they will live a life of service and honor. Trained to be warriors, trained to be a part of something bigger than themselves, trained to stand in the gap, trained to fight, and trained to fight to win. We need the strong to get on their feet, raise their voices, and say, "Follow me." And for the past 4 years, the so-called leadership over the U.S. military has been reckless, feckless, and respectless. But I know that they are out there. I know there are soldiers that are waiting to be trained to win, and we need them. We need that person who is battle-born and heavy-tested, willing to lean into the wind, set their face like flint, and dare to oppose the enemies while also mentoring those that they lead. Somebody out there who could join our U.S. military who will say like Andrew Jackson, "I was born for the storm, and a calm does not suit me." So let's put our men and women in uniform with a sense of mission again. Train them like they fight, so they can fight like they train, which means fighting to win. Because he who sweats more in training bleeds less in battle, and that does apply to our military. That applies to life, but it also applies to our military, and I'm so glad to know that we have a new commander-in-chief, really an old commander-in-chief, who gets that, because the time may be coming that they get put to the test again. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.